question was asked, what validation do we have to our oral tradition on the commentaries of the Tanakh, and more so on the validity of the Tanakh itself, as in the Tanakh from the days of Moshe onward. So the truth is that we have to first understand what is the Tanakh. So the five books of Moshe, we can say the five books of the Torah, yeah, Chamisha Chumshei Torah, we can say those are a work that the Jewish people had going into Eretz Yisrael after the 40 years of the desert. How exactly it was compiled, was it piecemeal all at once, that is openly discussed in the Talmud. So the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, however it was written, was an entity going into the land of Israel, it would seem. That's what we see from our sages. Then you come into the book of Yoshua. Now, whenever people question our tradition, I like to ask one question, and that is, can you show me which generation is the weak link? Because Moshe Rabbeinu writes in the Torah that we were 600,000 men. Let's assume there was an equal number of women over the age of 20, so that's 1,200,000 people. And then you have children, so you're somewhere in the range of 2 million people who witnessed the miracles of receiving man every day. I'm not talking about the great revelation at Sinai. Let's leave that for a minute, because we don't have that much clarity as to what the Jewish people saw at that revelation. We know the Ten Commandments, but there's a lot that we don't know about that specific occurrence in world history. So let's look at something else. 10 plagues, the splitting of the sea, and to my mind, the greatest miracle, 40 years in the desert where 2 million people have food coming down from heaven. Now, that's recorded in the Torah. You don't need commentaries to understand that. And I think that one would have to agree, or I don't see how one could disagree, that to invent such a concept and sell it to the masses is something that we don't know of a way of doing that. That would seem to be a very powerful proof to the miracles of the Torah, and that can lead to other points in the Torah. Now we go on to the book of Joshua, where Joshua speaks about other miracles. Heavenly stones, sun and moon freezing still, Jordan splitting, just like the Yam Suf split. So the book of Joshua, again, is the continuum. And again, you have to ask, how was such a book invented? Our tradition is that the book's been around since the days of Joshua. And now if someone's going to say different, then they have to answer, how were the masses convinced of what was written? And the same goes on throughout the book of the books of the earlier prophets, be it the book of Samuel, which discusses open miracles, be it the book of Kings, that also discusses open miracles, the resurrection of the dead, etc. In each one, we're going to have to ask, where's the missing link? And I'm not talking about the latter prophets, because there you can argue whether those were validated or not validated when they were compiled. I'm not sure how important that is to us, but our tradition is that it was written in the time of the First Temple and organized, or canonized, I think is the modern word for it, in the beginning of the period of the Second Temple. And that in and of itself is a period that's shrouded in mystery, that period, the beginning of the Second Temple. Our tradition says that we were in exile for 70 years. Those 70 years are questionable. The Tanakh already questions how do you calculate those 70 years, and then the Talmud questions, and kings throughout that period were questioning how should you calculate those 70 years. But be that as it may, our tradition is that that's when the Tanakh was what they call today canonized. So I think that before we give credence to an argument against the validity of Tanakh, we have to counter and ask, where is the missing link? And here, again, I think it's very easy to say, well, maybe. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu had a laser light show. And maybe, you could say maybe about many things, but you haven't yet proven that anyone who lived 2 millennia ago, 3 millennia ago, over 3 millennia ago, had access to any of these objects, had access to any of these feats. So to say maybe, you could say maybe a lot of things. And maybe Martians came down on Mount Sinai. Maybe, go prove they didn't. So I think here we often have to question, is a person really being intellectually honest, and does a person really have any basis for developing a theory, this evolved? Tell me how. How were the masses convinced of the tradition that's openly written in the books? Now that's as far as the Tanakh. As far as the commentaries on Tanakh, I think that the more you study the commentaries, the more you'll understand that they're not really writing things that are new. The commentaries really are divided into two types of commentaries. You mentioned the Netziv. We could take Rav Hirsch. If you take those commentaries and you read what they're saying, after you read what they're saying and you go back to the comments of the rabbis from 3 millennia ago or 2 millennia ago, you start realizing, hey, that's what they were saying. I didn't catch it. That's what they were saying. As the Medrash says, sometimes you have a gem and there's a leaf on the gem, and when someone takes off the leaf, you say, hey, there's the gem. And very often, although what the Netziv is saying sounds extraordinary, but when you look closely, you suddenly say, hey, that's what the word said. I never realized that that's what I was being told in that Medrash or in that insight that the sages told me. So to say that the Netziv invented, I don't think that's so accurate. Another example of that would be the Malbim, where the Malbim writes a fantastic commentary, but really the Malbim's point was to show you how this is what the text says, or this is what our tradition said, but we didn't appreciate the depth of what was being said. When our sages said a comment on a pasuk, so very often we just see it as a comment, and along comes the Malbim and starts explaining to us the great insight into the definition of each word or the grammatic use of that word, where our sages said, hey, that meant the following message, which we might have missed. Our tradition is that from the days of Sinai, we had 13 and 32 laws of derivation, two different types of laws of derivation, and quite possibly we had more. And so those were used. And when you read a comment of the sages, it seems like an insight, when actually it's something that was derived from the text. If we would understand the laws of derivation, we would understand why the text is actually instructing us in that way. To us, it's all gibberish because we don't understand the system. The more we study the system, the more we can understand that the sages were A, passing on tradition, and B, the sages were just revealing to us the information that is really encoded in the text. And again, if we really understand the meaning of the words, for example, the Malbim spends a lot of time explaining why no two words mean exactly the same thing. So if we have an accurate understanding of what the difference is between Gila, Rina, Simcha, Ditzach, Hedva, if we really understood the difference, we would understand what each word was teaching us in the Tanakh. So what's the difference between Tzadikim Yismechu and Ya'altzu, two terms for happiness? But if we'd understand, we would understand the message. What's the difference between Oyev and Soneh? Two types of enemies, but it has a world of a difference. And again, we lack the understanding, so for us it seems tremendous. The more we understand, the more we realize that's what we're being taught. I'll give you an extreme example of that. When I learned by Rav Pesin Zatzal, so Rav Pesin would have a class which ran every day of the week other than Tisha B'Av, including Shabbos. He would give a class that would start, I don't remember if it was at 5 a.m. or 5:30. I think it went from 5 to 6 a.m. every day of the week, including Shabbos, including Sundays. Only on Shabbos and Sundays we would start a little bit later. You could sleep a little later, right? So every day of the week he would teach this class. And the class would cover barely one side of a page of Talmud in a year. Barely one side. Why is that so? Because he would spend a lot of time defining each term, defining each line in the Talmud. And when we'd ask him, how do you ever learn the Shas if you spend so much time understanding each and every word? He would tell us, after you understand the word, then every time you encounter that word, you don't have to spend all this time. You know how to say, okay, this word means A, B, C, and D. Let's take a simple example. The Talmud will very often question with the word that's spelled Aleph, Yud, Nun, Yud. Right? So we look at that word and we say it means Eini, is that so? Well, that word, spelled that way, has two pronunciations, which mean two different things. It can either be pronounced Eini, like E-E-N-E-E, Eini, which is short for two words, In, He. Is that correct? That's a weak question. What? Oh, yeah. Or it can be pronounced, like we would say, A-Y-N-E, Eini. That's not so. Two different levels of questioning. You just read the Talmud, you don't see a difference. The Talmud sometimes says, Im timtza lomar, and sometimes it says, Im timtzi lomar. Two different statements. If you don't notice the difference between Im timtza and Im timtzi, you think the Talmud said the same thing. They have two completely different weights in halacha. Im timtza means if you will find an answer to tell me. And Im timtzi means if you will actually analyze what I just said, you will find an answer to tell me. One is saying a hypothetical issue you might have. The other is saying there's a built-in issue if you'll only look closely. Two different terms. But again, you just read it. You don't notice you read two different terms. You study it in depth. You start understanding there's much more being said over here. So the same is true with the Tanakh. It can seem like the sages actually said a lot. The more we understand where the sages got what they said, where they got it from, the more we understand that they were just revealing to us what's really built into the text. You have commentaries. The Marzu wrote a commentary on the Medrash Rabbah showing where the Medrash Rabbah got each Medrash from. Okay, it takes a lot of depth. It's you're studying the syntax, you're studying the form, you're studying a lot of different sciences of the language. When you're studying this, and most people don't have the patience or the skill to do it. But again, that doesn't mean the sages invented. And that, again, can be really understood better the more we understand their system.